Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
I appreciate all you have done. You're the father I never knew. You're my first true friend. But I have other friends now. Family. If you are staying for me, you need not.
What of those who still turn away from you? Who see you and think only of the barn?
There will always be those who fear what they do not understand, but they're fewer now, thanks to you. I'm safe. I'm loved. I'm happy. My heart is here, but yours can be here and out there. Balance is possible, is it not?
I'm ready whenever you guys are.
I'm totally started already.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Oh, okay.
I started already.
Jesse's gone and started the whole podcast.
You left us in the dust, bro.
That's all right.
I started like 20 minutes ago.
You fool. You fool. You fool. I will destroy you.
It is episode 104.
You fool.
Of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I will destroy him.
And the basic subject matter for tonight will be Star Trek Discovery Season 4. Episode 1, Kobayashi Maru.
Shippy ship.
With extra
ship,
camera
shippy,
movement.
Shippy ship ship.
Although
shippy,
some people say shippy, Kobayashi Maru.
Shippy ship ship Maru. Maru.
Kobayashi Maru. Kobayashi Maru.
Shippy ship ship Maru.
We accept all pronunciations.
That camera was just shaking all over here. The place.
Isn't right? that the name of that whaling, that boat, that TV show where the boat, where the guys go and get the whalers?
No, that's the Voyage of the Mimi.
No, this is a modern, not Voyage of the, not Voyage, you know, not Voyage of the Mimi. With LeVar Burton.
Was LeVar Burton on the Voyage of the
no,
Mimi?
No, but he was on Reading Rainbow.
Well, why would you say he was on Voyage of the Mimi?
Well, why would you say I was talking about Voyage of the Mimi?
I didn't know what you were talking about, and I thought maybe you meant Voyage of the Mimi, but I understand now that's ridiculous because it was called the Mimi.
So,
it was the Voyage of the Mimi. You would have made the mistake of thinking it was called the Kobayashi Maru.
What if it was like the Voyage
of
the
Mimi? Wait. So when you don't know, I said, why did you think I was wrong? You said, I didn't know. I made a guess. Well, if you were making a guess, why did you correct me? You were like, no, it's Voyage of the Mimi. You mean Voyage.
No,
Mimi. You corrected me on something you didn't know the answer to.
We'll roll back and play the tone.
Okay, let's play back the tape sometime.
And I am certain that my tone,
instant replay,
it certainly was not intended to be a corrective. It was intended to be an inquisitive
statement. I think you used the word no at one point.
Okay.
I was talking about the show that's more recent. South Park made fun of it. It was a reality show about people on a boat that was trying to.
Oh,
they were
yeah.
throwing spoiled butter at the. At
yeah.
The
I don't remember
ships.
What
yeah.
it was called.
Something Maru.
Yeah. But Maru just, I think, means ship in Japanese.
Well.
Or something like that.
Yeah, that would. Well, I was just saying for pronunciation purposes, I wonder if they can provide us with any clues.
Or pronunciation purposes. But any are accepted here. Okay, first thing, most important thing before we get started.
Maru means circle, but also merchant ships. Anyway, okay, go ahead.
Merchant ship. We must first get out of the way, right? Since we're going to be talking about Discovery, we're going to be doing weekly coverage of Star Trek Discovery Season 4. However, the good folks at the corporate headquarters decided 2 days before it aired to...
2 days.
To inform everybody that nobody in the rest of the world outside of North America was going to get it.
Just enough time to let everybody promote the show.
Yes.
Before pulling the rug out.
Including actors and producers at conventions, etc. However, this is a shitty situation. We're going to continue our coverage, but we do have a lot of fans. A huge chunk of our fan base is outside of the North America region. So we're going to try to put out some periodic bonus material for you all. So if you are outside of the country and have not had a chance to somehow watch Discovery, we're not going to ask how. You don't need to listen to this episode. Save it till later. And you can listen to the bonus content as it's released. So just keep an eye on the feed and we'll dribble out some.
Or you
some
can totally
non-Discovery, non-spoiler.
You could mean to do it, but then forget to do it. And then subsequently forget our show ever existed and then never listen to us again, which we hope you don't do. But that's the danger. That's the danger we're facing.
That is the danger we're facing. Yeah. But anyway, so that's what we can do. But for the rest of you all,
danger.
The rest of you all in North America, or who have somehow, through miracles of gifting, perhaps, maybe people are sending around VHS tapes like in
Whoa.
The old days.
What if we came back to those days? That would be lame, but it would also be kind of nostalgic and neat for a minute.
That's, you just described hipsterism.
Oh, man.
Lame, but kind of neat for a minute.
Yeah, right. But you dedicate yourself to it. It's a real bummer.
If you've gotten a hold of a VHS tape recorded on a VHS VCR, and somebody has shipped it over to you, say...
And you have a VCR to play it.
You might be in Kyoto. You might be in Belarus somewhere.
You might be in Wimbledon.
You could be... you could be in London.
You could be in Netherlands.
You could be somewhere in the Netherlands.
You can be in Sydney 2 or Sydney 1.
Wait, what?
What?
Paris 2, Paris 1.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I was imitating the way that like VPNs list their places you can call from. You can do the VPN thing and then say you're from Paris 1 or Paris 2.
I couldn't imagine what you're talking about. Although I think in this case the VPN thing wouldn't work because I think you have to have an American credit card in order to get an account with North American Paramount Plus.
Oh, right. That's the problem. You can't just go to a different country. It's not like it's geo-locked. It's just not on the service.
Yes. Yeah. So there are...
Oh, right.
A company has decided in all its wisdom that it has a popular product that people would like, and it's giving that product to a small proportion of the people.
Right, before having an alternate, like, they've decided to change formats before having it ready. So it's like Paramount Plus, yeah, we want to put in our special overseas Paramount Plus, except that's not ready yet.
We're just going to piss you the fuck off to start and then be like, okay, now buy our product.
Yeah, well, first of all, you have to put up with the fact that you're literally incapable of buying our product, so you cannot watch the show.
Counterpoint, none of us have MBAs. So we, strictly speaking, we don't know how to exploit people through capitalism. Yeah. So
maybe they were losing money off of somehow having it on Netflix. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure they did very poorly for themselves. Regardless of the reason, that's the deal. Those people aren't listening anyway because they're not.
They're smart. I mean, it's true. It's true though. When people say like, "Oh, I know how to run businesses better than this business," they should live blah 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 blah. I don't want to be one of those people that assumes to know what the business is like. It's always a person that's very confident about a subject they aren't experts in.
You're better than them.
If you're like
super, you can do it. You're better than them.
When people act all confident about a subject that's not their specialty, it often means they know very little about that subject. You know what I mean? When they're like, "Oh, it's easy. You just got to do A, B, and C." It's like, no, there's a lot more involved than that. But I do think that doesn't excuse what's happening.
Oh, absolutely not.
At all. So I'm not defending them by any means. I'm just saying I don't know how business works.
If you're going to write in to feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. To feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
It's bullshit.
All I know is monkey business.
With comments or anything and you want to indicate, normally people indicate where they're calling from. Writing from, then you might want to append if you're say writing from Amsterdam, you might want to say Amsterdam, comma Tennessee, right? You might want to say I'm writing from Salzburg, comma Ottawa, right? That way, no one will be suspicious that you have somehow acquired the episode of Discovery in some form of a shady fashion. So don't worry, your secret's safe with us. So let's get started. We're going to talk Discovery, Kobayashi Maru, or Kobayashi Maru. First order of business, which is your preferred pronunciation?
Mm-hmm. I always said Maru.
I like Maru.
Yeah, Maru.
I like Kobayashi.
We'll go with Maru.
It reminds me of Aunt Beru.
Now I like it a little bit less.
I fucked it up.
Nothing against Aunt Beru.
This is a Star Trek podcast.
I have somewhere listed somewhere about, there's something Star Wars-y about this episode. I'm trying to remember what it is.
remember.
Oh, it's the beginning when the opening scene, which we might as well talk about now, the teaser, when I liked this teaser. Mm-hmm. I'll start out. I liked the episode. I enjoyed the episode. I liked the teaser because it was a self-contained little story. It was a mm-hmm. short little adventure that's reintroducing us to the characters, reorienting us to where the characters are right now. It's all super Star Trek-y, Federation-y in terms of doing a good thing no matter what. It's still a little imperialistic, but in a slightly nicer way.
In a good kind of way.
But I do think it was very briefly a little over the top when Book's ship came out of the shuttle bay of the Discovery, split into a million pieces, did a little floopy move, and then right. came back together. And that's where the music and the ship doing that had a Star Wars-y feel.
That was pretty Star Wars-y.
Yeah, it did.
It's a minor thing because overall I enjoyed the action and everything that happened in this little teaser, but that thing stood out to me.
Now that part where the ship was blooping around for no reason did remind me that the opening actually reminded me initially of Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yes, or Beyond. They both basically start with people running off of cliffs, as I recall.
Yeah, but I don't remember how Beyond begins. I remember Into Darkness begins with them on that planet where they become gods of the planet or whatever through their lore, whatever. But the thing that reminded me of Star Wars. When Booker's talking about the Iku Zen ceremony where the boy becomes a man, more like boy becomes a dead.
Oh, that's
too soon?
Yeah, that was hot take, biting commentary.
Needlessly cruel. but I'm laughing.
Yeah, I'm laughing.
I'm laughing.
But this little roly poly thing comes by and almost hits a Burnham in the foot. And she's like, "Ooh!" It looked like a cross between a tribble because it was all furry and one of those zip zoppers from Star Wars. You know those little zip zoppers on the roly thing?
Yeah.
They look like little robots. They look like little RC cars or something.
Zip zoppers is the technical term.
They look like a zip zopper with a
Death Star.
Yeah, on the Death Star.
Yeah, they're all over.
They look, and so that's what this looked like, a zip zopper.
They look like little red bread boxes.
It looked like a little remote control zip zopper with a tribble put on, hat.
I'm assuming this was meant to be a fat tribble.
Oh. So it needed some kind of assistance and it had a wheelie thing to...
No,
I don't... it was moving fast.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that I'm a little confused by, because it appeared to be a tribble. It was larger than you'd expect. The CGI was poorer than you'd expect because the production quality on this episode is fucking out of this world.
Yeah, but there was another CGI scene I was not
there
a
were
fan
like
of.
One or two little things where, and that tribble just stood out because you're like, what? Mm-hmm. You're like, wait, is that a tribble? Why is it so big? Why is it scooting around so fast? Why is there a tribble? Did she say hello to it like in a cute, like you say hello to a dog or cat walking by, or is it a crew member?
Yeah, I was interested in it's sort of what's it called, the relationship, not hierarchy is the wrong word, but you know the word. Do they look down on this thing, or what's its status? Like its status, I guess.
It's
what's
social
status? Yeah,
where how much on the social capital does a fat, fast tribble earn?
Yeah,
in 32nd century Starfleet,
or maybe they communicate by just going whoo and sounding all cute all the time.
Can you do a tribble sound?
You just flutter your tongue.
But they do all that like high pitch and then low pitch. It's not a tribble sound.
That's funny.
That's Friday Night Dan. Good.
Carnitine.
What else about this scene did you all enjoy?
The opening scene, it was neat. The butterfly people with the butterfly satellites.
Those people
and
are jerks.
Like they had those butterfly kite satellites. They were jerks because the whole what's it called, tipping point or whatever, when they got pissed off and started chasing them around was for a dumb reason.
It was a miscommunication, classic miscommunication,
but notice that they got the idiom right for no strings attached. We were, because like they always get idioms wrong. We were just talking about that. But
maybe
this
that's
week,
because they don't like spiders.
Oh, maybe.
They might be an anti-spider.
Maybe
they knew what no strings attached meant, and they didn't like it, and I think that's what like started things off like on the wrong foot. They were like, "Well, what? No strings attached?"
Well, they didn't like they didn't like the idea that,
you guys
like,
are talking about no strings attached.
I think they didn't like the idea that the Federation was coming in and like being like, "Hey, we're going to give some shit to you and you're going to owe us from now on. Yeah. We're the mafia." Which is interesting also because there was an implication that the Federation was looked kind of like, people were shady about the Federation last season, and it happened again. So I want to know, If like, why is well, everyone
they're
still so,
well, they're,
why on. Were they so shady about the Federation?
In season three, there was some discussion about the idea that the Federation, or at least an implication that it, as the dilithium was going down, and even before the burn, there were issues with the Federation sort of closing in on itself a little bit. I mean, you know, power things shift, people become more corrupt. We've seen plenty of corruption in the Federation, and there are a lot of meta arguments you can make about the Federation that they touch upon a lot in Deep Space Nine, a little bit here and there, and, you know, some Star Trek movies and stuff, some of the TNG movies. But the idea, sort of reflecting on and interrogating the idea of the Federation as an unabashed good, right? Whereas in TOS and in TNG, you had your badmirals here and there.
Yeah, so many badmirals.
You even had, you know, you had some high level stuff that, you know, maybe Picard disagree with or whatever. But generally speaking, from the reading of the text of those episodes, is that the Federation fundamentally is right.
Right.
They have the right way to do things. And one of the reasons they're right is because they're willing to be like, well, we're not always right.
And that's where Discovery comes. They actually originally came from the time of when, you know, the Federation was like that. They come from like the TOS Federation.
TOS, TNG. Whereas in Deep Space Nine, they start looking a little closer and realizing you have to do things like murder ambassadors and do shady stuff. And, you know,
it's a fake.
And then the whole Section 31 stuff is introduced, which is fundamentally saying that all this quote unquote good stuff the Federation does, well, it's because they have their own Obsidian Order, their own Tal Shiar in Section 31 to go do shady stuff as needed to, you know, maintain the support. And it's also the basic idea that the Federation is based off of sort of US led Western style hegemony or imperialism, whatever word you want to use, which is the style being
hegemony sounds good.
We give you stuff, we give you blue jeans and Coca-Cola. And in return,
we get your shit.
You vote the way we tell you to vote in the UN.
You better.
You let us put bases where we want. You let us
black have sites,
troops and stuff. That's the deal. And that's what these Mothmen are afraid of, I think, right? Justifiably.
Yeah.
When you said Picard, I thought of Harvey Picard from that American Splendor. And I started thinking about Harvey Picard.
Yeah, but you think about this a lot.
And he's like,
I think
hey Harvey, what would you say to Harvey?
I wouldn't say anything.
You'd have to think of a Star Trek person saying it, something fun. Like, what is Data? Does Data have a catchphrase?
Yeah, yeah. His catchphrase is, "Hey, what's up, guys?
Okay. Hey, you guys.
Hey, guys."
So okay,
it's Data.
So
hey there.
So they don't. So they get
waka.
So they get the idiom, and that's interesting that they get the idiom for some reason.
I like how dismissive he is. The actor they got was great.
Yeah, it was a good actor
because he was straight up like, "What the fuck is it? What are you doing here, people?" Yeah, yeah, we get it. You just want to entangle us in some business.
But the minute they hear the word queen, first of all, it's awkward. They said it was awkward that they go, "No, she's a queen." I get they're trying to say like we worship her or whatever, but that was an awkward. If you're talking about an alien race, why are you going to bring up this awkward sort of way of phrasing?
Except they referred. I mean, they've referred to Grudge as a queen previously.
No, but but not to a new race of. A new species of people that you want to be very careful about the word.
It's an in joke.
It's an in joke. It's inside baseball.
Hey now. Oh yeah, that's right. Our international audience isn't listening.
Oh, so we can be.
We can talk about baseball.
Because they only play baseball in the United States of America.
And we drink out of red plastic cups.
No, they don't. Nobody plays baseball.
They hear the word queen, and they translate that to think, you got monarch, a butterfly.
And monarch butterfly.
Right.
Which is only one type of butterfly.
But why would they? It's weird that they would get the idiom, but then they would just assume they're holding a.
Oh, the whole scenario is completely ridiculous.
And on top of it, they already established that they scanned their ship and they found a carnivorous rodent, basically a carnivorous critter, in the form of a cat, which they were offended by for some reason.
Felis catus. That's a Data joke. It's about Data.
Oh, it's about his poem.
About his poem, Felis catus.
So that's. I mean, they should just be, if anything, they should be minorly annoyed or maybe a little offended, but not ready to kill because they brought over the cat. But like, they already know that the cat, they have a cat on ship, not a butterfly.
Do they have any cat?
like,
it's discovery,
do they have
so
any
you,
cat?
You have to make it like extra cat? Intense.
So do they think, you'd think these butterfly people would extra be able to detect the monarch, so they would know if a monarch was
it's
in there.
It's ridiculous.
Totally. And it was a total like mixing the words up stupidly. And yeah. Of course they freak out and then just attack like crazy. That was a little absurd that they just straight out attacked them.
I'm conceding all these points that it's absurd.
There's one more part.
Uh-oh. Shit.
One more part.
Fuck.
Look out, everybody.
Once this was all over and they got their dilithium, they seem not to give a shit about that monarch anymore. They're like, we got all this dilithium.
Like you guys had a bad time.
We were mean to you. Sorry about that. Too bad. Thanks for all the dilithium. They fucking forgot that there was a quote unquote monarch they nearly killed them over in the ship.
All these critiques.
Butterfly bitches.
All these critiques are well supported by the evidence. It's completely absurd. However, it didn't bother me in the slightest for two reasons. First,
it was kind of neat.
It was neat and it was fun, which is often in writing drama, that's the rule, right? You can break the rules if the result is cool. Now, you have to be
careful.
Break
the rule if the result is cool.
If you go too far.
Interesting woodland sort of planet.
It was cool. The aliens with their the butterfly wings and all that business and flying around.
Did you notice they made butterflies to make their wings? Wings and masks were made of butterflies.
Yes. Yeah. And the mask was all flapping on the wing. I was like, that's got to be annoying.
And they didn't.
It'd be annoying if there was a butterfly flapping on my face.
They didn't fold our arms like us. They fold them as if they had wings on.
Yeah. And all like, and they held their arms out. The guys in the background held their arms straight.
Yeah.
Like,
it's as if they had wings or something.
They got butterfly brains.
Yeah.
But.
It was
but
cool.
The other reason I wasn't bothered by it was that this was super TOS style in terms of interaction, and it's sometimes a little hard to engage with it on that level because
that's a thing that says
let's fly.
Harvey Picard says it
because it can be hard to engage on it on the TOS level because of the vast difference in production quality.
The vast difference of different quality. Sorry. I'm sorry.
The part of Patrick tonight will be played by Dan.
Most definitely. Yeah.
Because, you know, the TOS is different aspect ratio, colors and acting styles and production value and all that stuff. However, if you just look at the pure text of it, you could see the same conversation happening in like a TOS episode with the same nonsensical leaps that result in the communications problem and the sudden disappearance of the issue of the queen and all that one.
That's
it's like,
fair.
Oh, they're on a ship now. So now we're not going to try to rescue the queen anyway. And we can fly, but we stopped at the edge of the cliff. You guys can fly. You literally went to the edge of the cliff and then your butterfly people wings flew away. And then you just sort of stared at the ship all like, marr. And then they beamed the dilithium over and you were all like,
You're right. No, that's
butterflies are like, we're not.
So it didn't make any sense, but it was okay because it was fun. And mainly the purpose was, of course, to start the season off. It's really our first time seeing Burnham as captain. This is everyday Captain Burnham.
I liked it was brief, but I liked how they were on the ship and then they warped into the ship. They transported into the ship. Yeah. That just looked cool.
They were using
A
lot of that fast beaming. Yeah. Also, the other thing you see multiple times in this episode is they use the conceit, which I think we also saw in Into Darkness, where when they beam, it changes clothes for them as well. Right?
Oh, I didn't.
We see that with Tilly and Adira.
I didn't notice that.
We see it a few times. I think you see it directly a few times with Burnham, where maybe you don't see it 100% directly, but it's implied. But like the process of beaming also lets you change into the utility uniform that's appropriate for where you're at.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah. Or it was a costuming continuity error they made, and they're like, oh, shit, we got to retcon this.
What do you think about those new uniforms?
I like them.
They're kind of, you know, it's
they're a little,
new.
They're
more military looking.
The asymmetry is a little bit odd, the coattails or whatever. I'm not hating on it. But it's a little odd. I do think that the brighter colors are nice. I read that it was because, you know, last season they ended with them having these gray uniforms that had the colors as the highlights. But I read that when they were like looking at the filming and everything, the gray blended in too much with the set, right? So they're like, we got to do something to have the characters stand out. So boom, switch to the normal color.
It seems like throughout Star Trek and even like the stuff that isn't necessarily on TV, you know, just concept art and different things that come out of this and that, you move in and out of things that look more martial and military looking and things that look like less, yeah. You know, and you just see that
more pajama-y.
Yeah, more pajama. You see that even like with different TOS movies, it's that sometimes they look a little more military. Sometimes they look absolutely not military at all.
Enterprise had the most sensible duty uniforms.
Yeah.
Just straight up military.
Those like, sort of submarine uniforms.
Yeah, like submarine or Navy jumpsuits.
Duty forms? Is that when you like take a bath and diarrhea?
No, it isn't. Damn.
But these are seem the most sort of like Navy, like formal kind of uniforms.
Well, and they wear a number of uniforms because
they got some different
ones, like the Burnham's leather away mission outfit, and then there's her standard red duty uniform, and then she's wearing a dress uniform when she's giving a speech at next scene coming up pretty much when she's giving the speech at Starfleet Academy.
Adira and Tilly had that kind of action uniform when they were on the
space and they weren't wearing it when they beamed away. They were wearing their on duty uniforms, and when they beamed to the space station, what was it? Space Station Repair Beta 9 or Beta 6 or something. You didn't write this down, Dan?
Well,
I'm getting lazy.
Deep Space Repair
Beta 6. It sounds like it. Deep Space Repair Beta 6. But yeah, they were in their duty uniforms, and that's an example of what I was referring to earlier.
Yeah, how do you know the station name? Because I'm not seeing it.
Because Commander Nahlas mentions it.
He says it twice.
He's all like, "This is Commander Nahlas from Deep Space Repair Beta."
He makes a point of being something. Like, you know,
deep.
Whiny.
It just says from Deep Space Repair Beta 6.
Oh, we were right.
Precisely as we said.
Precisely as we said. Confidently, as we said, confidently and with verve.
Verve. The verve. In the verb pipe. In the verb pipe.
Verve pipe.
So Burnham says, "Let's fly now," which I guess she started saying last season or something. Well, see, Voyager, what did Janeway, she said, like, do it, and Kirk said,
do it,
take us out, or execute, and Lorca said, go.
Captain Pike said engage in the first Star Trek episode.
Apparently, he also, in the 2009 remake, he said, punch it.
Yes, he's all about punch it.
But now
says,
it's,
give it to me.
But now he says, hit it. And Freeman, of course, says, warp me, and then it's warp time. Sisko says, like, do it. But I couldn't find anything for Archer. I couldn't find out what Archer said.
Archer was like, fuck those guys.
Yeah, fuck it.
But Riker's all like, 5, 6, 7, 8.
For the death of the Klingons. Or for the death of the Vulcans or whatever. Never mind, that joke fell flat. What did you say? Oh yeah, yours was much funnier. You referenced 5, 6, the Riker. That was much funnier. I should have let Jesse talk. Yeah.
It's all right.
Riker's so jazzy.
Oh, before we
get to- Let's Fly. Is that cool or is that lame?
I think it's pretty cool.
That's fine.
I mean,
it's cool when she says it.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm going to be like, let's fly, it's not going to work.
Hey guys, let's fly now.
Hey guys.
I mean, nothing.
Can we hit it already?
Look, guys, it's 20 minutes. We're 20 minutes later than we expected to leave. Please, let's fly.
Why aren't we at warp 6 already?
I mean, Picard arguably could be thought of, his delivery could be thought of as better than Kirk's, but that's such a weird.
I think it's better, but it's a subjective thing.
Yeah, it is. Subjective, but Picard kind of has the ultimate, just the way he says engage and how he pulled.
I think he
Picard
invented the business. Catchphrase. I think he invented the, right. if you ask me, if you're going to, I think Picard invented basically the catchphrase for warping.
And sometimes he would hold his arm back and wait and he'd pause and then he'd go,
yeah,
engage. Like, and then he'd like point his finger forward.
Did he do that thing that you did where he'd be like,
oh, engage.
Cue.
That's what he says during sex.
Okay, so before we get too far, I just briefly wanted to mention the whole,
a Gorgon statue.
The whole previously on Discovery.
Not Gorgon statue, Gorgon.
The previously on Discovery at the beginning of seasons is always funny on Discovery because, first of all, you need it. And you need much more than, for example, when they would do it on Deep Space Nine, where they just have to recap a few key things. Discovery, they're always...
Horgon.
Yes, a Horgon. They're, it's a Horgon conclusion, Dan.
I was saying Gorgon.
But the Discovery ones always have to encapsulate either an entire season or sometimes even like a little more than that.
They give you the whole, yeah.
And season three, I enjoyed season three, but season three was an intense and convoluted season.
Yeah.
So watching this previously on Discovery for right before this episode started was I was making me feel insane, even though I knew everything very well what happened, but the way it's like jumping through this, it was like, oh, and then there was the burn.
Gets
and then
you all, like,
oh, check out, there's this weird Sukal dude.
I mean, we'll have to watch the recap for season one, because I don't even know how you explain some of the shit that happened in season one, like pre and post Klingon situation.
It's just somebody's like, previously on Discovery, some shit happened.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know how you summarize that. All the seasons have a lot going on, so it seems like they're all kind of convoluted in that sense.
Yeah, and plus they're season-long arcs, so
yeah,
it's a lot more than...
True
that, you know.
Star Trek doesn't really do that normally.
No, normally they don't.
Normally they don't.
Yeah.
Normally they don't.
I wonder what if they
normally
will do
it's
the
a rotisserie with French fries.
Previously on Star Trek,
I'd like some rotisserie chicken with French fries, please.
The Picard, the previously when season two of Picard comes around, the previously on season
whenever that happens,
that'll be another crazy one try to compress into.
No
a couple
doubt,
of
yeah, they'll show those robot snaky monsters coming out of that hole in space or whatever.
Space hole.
In this opening teaser. We'll get to the rest of the episode momentarily. But in the opening teaser, one of the things I really liked, the line that I thought hit the best. Do you have a guess? Which line do you think I think really was a strong
line? Was it Tilly's line?
No, Tilly had good lines.
I can't even remember what her line was, but it was something about being, she was like, oh no, because when Burnham says that was a thing, and Tilly is just like, ah, yeah, blah,
which
blah.
I think that's from Galaxy Quest. I think that's a line from Galaxy Quest.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I don't know for certain, but I have a recollection from Galaxy. Something about that felt Galaxy Quest. At first, I thought Orville, but I was like, no, it's not Orville. I think it's a Galaxy Quest thing, some Trek adjacent thing. But don't hold my feet to the fire. On that one. No, the line I liked was when they were asking what was, you know, it was like, Captain, you're flying erratically. Is everything okay? And she's like, oh, just negotiating.
Yeah.
I thought that was a cute Star Trek line. That was like a Star Trek captain, confident, getting the mission done, comically laughing at the danger that they're in.
Is there a chase?
She says, why do you still give us your dilithium? Because that's, because we're the Federation. It's what we do. We give people dilithium.
I know. Right? It'd be like, funny if the moth,
it's our dilithium,
the moth people interpreted,
but we're giving
like,
it to you.
Oh, they're like, it's like some sort of charity organization.
Yeah, right.
Are you guys a nonprofit or like, are you trying to get volunteers?
The Dilithium Federation.
I mean, I know we've discussed this whole dilithium situation before, but, and I know we've had this discussion. Now, Star Trek, the idea was Star Trek before is we lived in a time where there was no scarcity. But they never talked about the fact that there was scarcity in the form of dilithium. That just didn't
until the 24th century, they learned how to recrystallize dilithium in the 24th century.
Right.
So it at least lasted longer. That was a whole thing. Like at the beginning of TNG, they were all like, oh, you know, Scotty's all like, what are you going to do? The dilithium matrix. No, it's all good, Scotty.
Yeah,
we don't got to worry about that shit because we are part of Gene Roddenberry's new vision in which there is no interpersonal conflict and there is no scarcity. And the only thing to be scared of are big holes in space.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because with the TOS, you could see you see like these arms like moving the dilithium around because they can't, you know, recrystallize
it.
They're moving it out the old dilithium.
So, using it up.
So a couple points then. Why can't they crystallize it in the future in the year 2900? Why can't they recrystallize
it? I think it was different in the future. It was more like they didn't know what the fuck happened with the burn. They also
The burn just fucked everything up.
And more importantly, the burn... It blew up all the dilithium.
Yeah.
So as far as they knew, there was like no dilithium.
So
finding the dilithium planet was like this awesome thing.
So here's the thing. There always was a scarcity of dilithium. It was just the situation of like, oh, we got so much. We'll have it forever, you know?
I think it got to the point where it was less necessary. And then in the future, everything got fucked.
Yeah, everything got fucked.
Until they found the dilithium planet.
But when they talk about the universe of no scarcity, it strictly was not true from the start, because
in
even though there
context,
was a ton of dilithium, there was still a limited
like
supply.
Fuels.
Yeah.
And that's what my next point was going to be about, how now that's super comparable to like how fossil fuels are now.
Because 32nd century post burn, post fixing Sukal, getting Sukal away from the dilithium planet. That Federation is effectively like, I guess, the Saudis. They came across a huge amount of resources, and now they can use it to leverage their power in the rest of the universe.
Of the world.
Now, maybe they do it for nice reasons, maybe for not so nice reasons. That's a separate question.
Just saying, dilithium.
But it's their dilithium.
Dilithium was always a finite supply. But I mean, I guess that follows by the universal rule of, you know, you can't have 100% efficient systems. So eventually everything's going to run out. But so I guess for all intents and purposes.
Well done, sir. You've staved off countless emails, countless Twitter threads.
Did I ever tell you how I used to think throw caution to the wind?
You told us that you thought it was something called kosh.
Yes.
And you were throwing it into the wind to disperse somehow.
Oh, I know I told you guys, but that was my way of being sneaky and saying the audience probably has never heard me.
No,
say
I'm
it.
Pretty sure you mentioned it on the podcast.
Seems
like that's podcast prime.
I could be wrong about that.
Podcast prime. Prime.
Longtime fans can write in and let us know.
Well, you know, they don't listen to all the episodes necessarily, so it's important that we repeat ourselves often.
It is. It's also important that we periodically take a brief break. So let's do that right now. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion of Kobayashi Maru. All right, we're back from break now. That counts as being back from break. We've doodled our way back from break. Okay, so getting into the meat of this episode, the fleshy, delicious meat, the chunky, tribble-like flesh, like a scallop.
Like a big hairy scallop.
Like a big hairy scallop.
What does dilithium do other than star travel? It just powers shit in general.
It burns
right?
you if it's too hot.
Yeah, from the burn from Michael Burnham.
It's got does it have delta?
It's the deal where the dilithium is what helps mediate the relationship between matter and antimatter.
Yeah.
Something involved in that.
Which means they can make them all even. So you can like power planets with it and shit.
It's been a long time since I've read through the Starfleet technical manual, so I don't remember the made-up specifics.
Right. But
somebody out there listening to the show understands the made-up specifics better, than we do.
When it went to the scene with Saru, who's a great elder now, who's pretty badass, he's a great elder. Could you imagine having a great elder?
He's not
elder?
Even that old.
It's better than having a shitty elder.
Yeah, for real.
This guy's great.
He's only a great elder because he's from like a previous millennium. He's not like...
And he's also from the golden age of science, so in ways he knows more than they do.
There's been plenty of those Kelpian people since him that have like lived past their
because he sorted
Kandahar,
that stuff out
or whatever it's called
Kandahar.
I'm sorry, that was not the right
now word. What's the deal? I thought we were supposed to take old people from the past and treat them with like child gloves, you know, and just be like, oh, that's very cute that you would say that, you know. Isn't that what people do with old people from the past? Because it's
you
like
mean time travelers from the past
when they're like, oh, this weird box you look at and you can see all these pictures on it, and they're like, oh, that's a television, how cute, he's from the past. We shouldn't take them seriously.
No, you throw them in prison because they're breaking the laws of time.
Broke the temporal laws, the temporal treaties.
The point is you look at your elders and you treat them as if they don't know anything. That's what we traditionally are supposed to do, right?
Okay, wait, I'll bite. No?
But that's what we do. That's what people do.
I mean, is it? I mean, are you speaking exclusively about time travelers?
I'm
or
just
are you
talking
including
about-
like just... people who are older.
No, I'm just anyone who's older than you and than you. You treat them as if they
like
don't
me?
Jesse's older than
you. Treat them as if
I'm older than you.
You treat them as if they're cute and out of touch. That's what we do, right?
Does that explain our dynamic, Dan? Is that I'm slightly older than you, so
dynamic Dan?
No, our dynamic, comma Dan.
This
like
is dynamic
our dynamic.
Dan.
Oh, our dynamic.
We have a dynamic.
I thought my name was
we
dynamic
are three
Dan.
Individuals.
It should be.
We are professional entertainers who have a
professional
various dynamics between each other, and our dynamic is potentially, I'm hearing now, based on the fact that you're treating me with kid gloves.
Yeah.
Which is somewhat ironic because that's like an old person thing to say. So, by the way, Dan, you better be careful. You might be turning into an old person.
Oh, no. That's terrible.
Yeah. Because well, as they might be giants once said, you're older than you ever were, and now you're even older.
Oh, bummer.
And now you're even older.
Well, I'm
and
just...
now you're
I'm,
older
I'm,
still.
Those guys are like 60 or
I'm
something.
I'm just, wow, they are pretty old, aren't they? I'm just pointing out that in the future, in the year 2900 or whatever, they treat old people with respect.
Or 3190.
Whatever, around 3000, they treat their elders with respect because they respect Saru.
This specific culture is treating Saru with respect.
Yeah, but I mean, you're
trying to transpose.
No, but the, all of Star,
their cultural
the Federation,
traditions on a, the Federation. Maybe they're not. So, I haven't seen any people in the Federation.
They have with the whole fucking crew of the Discovery.
Yeah, but they're not older people. They're younger.
No, but they're from,
in time.
But I'm talking about either they're older, like in terms of literal age, or older as in from a different time period. In both cases, you treat them as if they don't know anything.
As our good captain has tried to argue, they've saved all their asses a bunch of times, and so they maybe get a little respect.
But if they hadn't,
maybe they'd be like, oh, isn't that cute? They have like old,
they did that thing where like they saved like just all life in the universe or whatever.
Yeah, that was helpful too. So that in that scene they were talking about
keep patting themselves on the back
The Kelpians were talking about using dilithium to travel through the stars, right? But then someone else was like, well, we need to use it to help our planet here. So there must be some other use
you
for it.
Do both.
Who were the
I'm wondering what that
those
use.
Those are the Ba'ul.
So I'm wondering if that what that use is, and I'm guessing it's just like to feed
the creatures with the raspy voices?
Yeah, the Ba'ul, the ones floating in the water. Those are the Ba'ul. They're the ones, because if you recall, the whole deal with the Kelpians were...
Those are the other guys.
The Kelpians originally like hunted the Ba'ul and like fucked them over. Right. And then the Ba'ul once... At a certain point got the upper hand, and then they started hunting and eating the Kelpians. And then Saru was able to help resolve all those issues.
He became a Helpian.
He was a Helpian.
So
he didn't have to eat kelp anymore.
So do you think dilithium is basically just the green equivalent of coal? You like feed into a thing and it zaps it up and then gives you almost infinite energy. It's not the fuel, it's just part of the process.
It's a necessary component.
So does
antimatter would be the fuel, the antimatter and the matter.
It's sort of like antifreeze.
It controls
something.
The mechanism.
So what's the mechanism? Something like fusion or something?
Look it up in the technical manual.
It's a matter antimatter fusion.
Everybody knows this. Oh, and if they don't, they either don't care or they're not going to find out from us.
So it's a matter antimatter confusion.
That does sound like an awesome prog rock band, the Matter Antimatter Confusion.
Okay.
All right. So this episode that we're discussing, as is our warrant is to discuss this episode. According to all the ads I saw on the internet, it said it was going to be this episode, the Kobayashi Maru, the Voyage of the Mimi. That's what we're discussing.
Kobayashi Maru.
Jumping off your point, though, Dan, this episode appears to be setting up a sort of a thematic season-long thing about like the nature of command, maybe. Maybe that's not the core story, but that whole thing, it's epitomized between the conversations between Burnham and President Rilak. Right? Mm-hmm. So we're introduced to President Rilak.
I thought it was Rilak.
Rilak. R-I-L-L-A.
It's Lara Rilak, like Lara Croft. Lara Croft.
Lara Rilak.
Lara.
Lara. So they have these conversations.
Lara.
And
Laura.
The theme there is that there's a disagreement.
Who voted for this one?
About the nature of command. And what I liked a lot about these scenes, particularly the scene at the end, but it builds throughout the entire episode. From the first time they meet, is the idea that in classic, again, good writing fashion, Star Trek fashion, they're presenting an argument for which there's not necessarily an easy side to pick, right? Because we have, you know, we really like Captain Burnham. She's the person we identify with. She's the character we're following. We've seen her be successful. So we have a natural sympathy towards her viewpoint.
She has cool shoes.
She has awesome shoes, kicks ass. On the other hand, everything that President Rilak was saying was sensible, right?
She was kind of saying it at the wrong time, though.
I agree. I think there's a lot you can say. I'm not certainly saying that she's like, right, or that she was right
but
to talk about this at the time.
She made a good point, but it was not the time to make that point.
And it's also, she can be right and still have the wrong conclusion, right? She has already decided through a brief encounter with Burnham, although also no doubt including reading over her files and all that other stuff, she's concluded, or at least it appears at this stage, who knows, maybe this is one of those complicated managerial tests where somebody's like, I believed in you the whole time, but I just wanted to push you. They could go a number of different directions with it. But at least from what we know now, she's decided that Burnham's style is admirable in terms of saving lives and all this other stuff, but she is not to be trusted for certain things that are important. She's not a tool she doesn't want to use. Like Rilik wants to use Burnham in her arsenal of tools, but she's straight up telling Burnham, yeah, you're not right for like this other shit I need to do. And I'm kind of going to be focusing on that.
Did we actually get a reason as to why the president wanted to come on the ship? Now Burnham thinks she's trying to like seem tough, but also
it seems like
she wanted to check out the crew to see, to check out Burnham. But that's what I meant. Yeah. Burnham. They wanted to check out Burnham to see if Burnham could be trusted.
Burnham assumed that she was just doing the politician thing of trying to be cool and going on quote unquote easy mission. Yeah. So she can talk about Brian Williams style, how she was like shot at.
But you know, whether she was doing it to be tough, which was what Burnham was scared of, or if she was doing it to check out Burnham, the result was the same, where there was some super disaster going on and she's questioning Burnham's decisions when literally seconds matter. Like you notice when they shipped away from that space station, the fucking the space station just like immediately got hit by an Oort rock.
Oh yeah.
Like just in this Oort rock. This is one of the reasons that
frozen methane.
And so in either case, this is the reason
more like a fort rock.
One of the reasons Burnham probably didn't want the president going on the ship is for situations like that to happen. So, you know, it might be useful in the end. She made a useful point when she tried to calm down Nalis. That was cool. And she had good things, important shit to say at the end, but she was really interfering at the worst possible time because literally a second after they left the ship, that rock got blown up. Yeah. If the president decided to give a third lecture, the whole mission would have failed.
Like the shuttle thing, like just barely made it in there. Like it exploded, and like not everybody made it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. So if GA only gave one speech instead of two, maybe Nalis would have lived.
I know. Right?
It's fucked up.
Not that this is how they portrayed it, but you could potentially argue that her posing the question and seeing Burnham's response of actually staying, waiting, and starting an argument, basically, instead of maybe the president would have been like, hey, you know what would have been good is if she had just ignored me and just walked off. Right. But they didn't. That there was no like real subtext to suggest that.
Mm-hmm. But it was cool that the president at first seems like she's going to be some sort of obnoxious character, but she had two uses and she showed the usefulness of politics, when she was talking Nalis down and when the thing she had to say, which was strangely mirroring what Garrick was saying in Armand Bashir. Because
on last week's episode.
Yeah. So the president says you need to mitigate the bad circumstances, know when to run, and Burnham should have
know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Exactly. The time, a tale as old as time, older than Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
So Burnham should have basically. So I guess
the whole new world.
The president, I guess, was saying that Burnham should have run in that situation. She shouldn't have saved those people. Whatever. But she sounded like Garrick, who in Armand Bashir, who said know when to quit.
Yes.
And it's one very sort of like one more cynical way of putting it, but it's the same kind
it's
of
practical.
Way. Yeah.
And Garrick's perspective was sort of saving himself. The president's perspective is we need people who are going to save the most people and not let personal issues get in their way. I think there's
Burnham wanted to kill Tilly and Nadir in that situation. Or not Burnham,
Rilik.
Grilik.
Grilla.
Grilka.
Grilka. Grilka was Quark's wife, as I recall.
No.
That's Rom.
The best I could do.
But it they're definitely, you know, it's the season premiere, so they're setting the seeds for the story that's coming along. And so one of them is seemingly obviously going to be this conflict, philosophical conflict really between Captain Burnham and President Grilik. Grilik. He got me doing it.
They kind of did that with the Admiral, Admiral Charles Vance a little bit.
Oded Fair.
What?
Oded Fair.
The name. Yeah, he was in
The Mummy.
It's a cool name.
I think he was in the Gigolo, the Rob Schneider Gigolo.
I have a note in my notes here. there's a bullet point. It just says Oded Fair is hot. Because he is.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
No, not too shabby.
Oded Fair. I think he was in one of those Gigolo movies.
I mean, he's in a lot of stuff.
I had no idea he was in all these movies. I never
saw Deuce Bigelow. He was in Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
I don't know how much we'll get to see him this season.
He seems like his story is kind of done. Because it also sort of said it brought back his family, so that implies some kind of closure in his situation.
And he last season he was lamenting that he had to hide because Federation HQ was all cloaked and they had to hide. They were always on the run, basically, and moving locations or whatever. And now he could be free and open and have his wife and daughter with him on the station.
Right, he had to hide them before. Yeah, and they they also mentioned, Burnham mentioned in the speech how what they gained like 21 new planets, and they'd been here a year so far, and they gained like, they went from 38 to 59 worlds, and they mentioned how they no longer basically are almost entirely uncloaked at this point. And the starship station looked, that station looked all flowy and zoopy and flippity flop, like some kind of Thor action, Thor land,
thorax.
And there's the Archer space
Odin land, Odin, yes. Odin land,
Valhalla,
and the Odin Valhalla kind of flowing, Jotunheim. Floating heaven, have pearly marbles of heaven's gates, and
The Starfleet issue pearl necklace,
The pearl necklace. Yes, Starfleet issue. Pearl necklace. Oh, man.
Starfleet issue, not like one of them dirty Ferengi kind.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
No, but yeah, dirty Jesse, Ferengi. You're right. The great part. I mean, it's on the one hand, it's like such ridiculous. It's so fan servicey. Mm-hmm. I don't mind fan service when it's done well. It actually makes me get all tingly inside, where it's both, okay, the Archer space dock, and then it's a space dock that looks like the space dock from Star Trek The Motion Picture.
Yeah.
And then they play the fucking Archer theme.
Yeah, and they
should have played the theme from The Archers. That would have been fun.
Yeah, so is that technically the Archer theme? I know that it did what a lot of shows kind of were doing for a while, where the opening theme would be something, but then the closing credits was like a different song entirely.
So that's the
music they played during the closing credits of Enterprise.
Yes,
and I didn't realize it was the
in
Archer.
In the show, it's the motif that's associated with Captain Archer, especially when Captain Archer like lifts his chin up and then like puts it down a little bit and then says something sort of folksy and clever, and then everyone's saved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
true. And he usually has like a black eye because he's been in some fight with some ruffians or ambassador or something.
He's always proven that he can hold his own.
Yeah,
that's true. He does kind of like look around, look up, and I wonder how that compares. Riker just kind of looks down at people.
Yeah, that's because Jonathan Frakes has back problems.
Oh, bummer!
Like everything awesome about Riker, it's going to turn out is because of, like, he did his sitting down by putting his foot over the back of the chair. That was related to his back problems. Mm-hmm. I think he stands up all strangely and like slightly leaning forward and looking aggressive
because he's in pain.
Probably turned out he grew the beard because of like he's just clenching his jaw so much he had to hide the rippling muscles because he's just in constant pain.
Oh no,
that seems likely.
And then he comes off as all cheery, tooting his trombone because he's just constantly high on drugs.
Yeah, he's always.
That's why Beverly Crusher colors. Left in the second season, because she's like, I just can't keep giving the first officer all these fucking hypo sprays full of opium.
And she caught him like snatching some a few times, and he was like, oh no, I need to get it because one of the ensigns
fell. Brian needs it for his shoulder. He was kayaking again. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm just getting it for O'Brien.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
That's the ticket.
John Lovett sketch. Yeah,
I'm gonna take it over to the deck three.
But yes, the Archer theme was good. The thing with the president is mirrored with a conversation that Burnham has with Book right at the beginning of the episode after the teaser, because he's doing it all playfully and boyfriend style, where he's like, yeah, we almost died. We got lucky. And she was like, luck is just being prepared. He's like, we weren't fucking prepared for that. That was some insane shit. Like, we almost died. And she's like, yeah, but we didn't. Mm. It's the exact same argument that she's making with the president. It's just it's done in a different style, but this is not the first time Burnham has heard this. And by the way, this has been mentioned going all the way back to season one, that Burnham is sometimes making decisions that, okay, like in the long term, maybe it turns out to be okay, but like there's still arguably not necessarily the smart way to do it.
Well, when she's talking about how like, well, we didn't get hurt, we won, that's the argument of the American football coach, basically. It's like, or announcers on American football, where they're like, and it's probably a lot of sports, but like I always hear it in football, where they're like, if you run a play and you get the W, you're a brilliant coach.
A W is a W.
Yeah, W is a W. It doesn't matter if
a W is a W.
Yeah, no one will remember why. It's just a W. And they're like, but if you do that same play and you don't win, you're a total loser piece
you're
of shit.
You're a complete fucking piece of shit. What's wrong with you?
So
you're a loser.
So
here's your $1 million anyway.
So basically, saying that it worked isn't evidence, isn't proof that it was the better idea, really. Yeah. It's proof that it worked that one time. But that's totally ignoring the statistical likelihoods and things like that, which seems like Burnham would be smarter than...
It's like, on the one hand...
It seems like Burnham's just trying to validate her own decisions.
And on the one hand, Burnham is in a TV show, and the things usually work out for the heroes in the TV show. On the second hand, depending on how many hands you have, I don't want to say on the other hand, because...
Some people have three.
Some people got
only
three.
Only those aliens.
Those tripod aliens.
because on the other hand, on the second, third, or fourth, or whatever hand, what was I saying?
I don't know. I don't know what the fuck you were trying to say.
I'm sure it was real fucking cogent before I got off a multi-hand tangent.
W, you're a genius, and L means you suck. Even if the plan is the same, then you're talking about on the one hand, and then you start talking about multiple hands.
You've totally left out the piece of information that may have been helpful.
There wasn't.
What was the piece of information? I don't remember there being any other information in there.
You started talking about
it. Don't even worry about it.
What if you're a cat, then you have on the other paw, you have four paws.
Yeah,
you know?
And most cats are left-handed. 90% of cats are left-handed. It's the exact opposite thing. I might have mentioned that last week. It's a fact I learned many years ago, but I do like bringing up when there's an opportunity to. Partly because I'm a left-handed human, and so
that means you're no-handed.
Fuck you, man. The kind of shit we have to deal with.
That's what a college teacher told me once.
Yeah, I know.
I think I mentioned that
college
on the podcast.
College is dumb. Don't go to college.
All right, so the other, well, whatever, who cares?
So you got to repeat yourself so the audience can...
It doesn't matter. The other thematic thing going on, of course, at least the hints of it are Saru and that great scene with him and Sukal, which I thought was real sweet and cute, how Sukal sort of leveraged Saru's own words against him, saying, like, you should go back to the Federation, and you're coming here telling all of us that we should, like, go out there. Don't stay here because of me. I've got new friends.
Sukal has grown a whole lot. Yeah. He's not like this weirdo on a decayed spaceship.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo on a pleasant planet.
Well, I thought that the actor playing him as this disturbed Kelpian dude, he's pretty good.
Oh, he's great.
Because he seems like he's grown, but he still seems like a childish weirdo. But he also seems like he has grown like emotionally.
He has a Ramish quality. Yeah. To me, he has a Ram. Like, he's like Ram in that he appears sort of goofy and almost absurd in some ways, but there's a secret wisdom there. There were hints of that last season. I think you're right, Jesse. We've seen a maturity.
Oh, but I'm wrong?
Yeah, no, Dan's generally wrong.
As usual.
Oh, man.
It's not that the guy is playing him like Rom, but there is that same playful, you know, that don't underestimate this person. And Saru, as much as Saru respects
this Kelpian, not person.
No, a person.
Kelpian aren't people.
Person is not human specific.
Kelpians are things.
Okay, I get you. I didn't know you were racist against Kelpians. I don't agree with it.
He's Mirror Dan.
But I, you know, this is the world we live in, folks. We take what we can get.
It's the world I know. Where's the world I know?
Where I'm beating up on Kelpians.
But yeah, he don't underestimate him. And even Saru, who respects him and loves him, underestimates him a little bit here and is surprised in a proud father kind of way, surprised that he got, because there was that one moment where Sukal is all like, he sort of mocks Saru because he was all like, oh, things can be in balance, right? Mm-hmm. Balance. Because that was something that Saru said, I think, last season. Yeah. Throwing his words back at him in order
that's why
to
I had that funny voice.
To shove him out, you know, say like, look, don't let me, I feel like an asshole if you just hang around here just because of me. I'm good. I'm hanging out with all these cool people who are nice to me now. So
yeah,
I thought that was cool.
So poor Kaihim. Poor Quajon.
Oh man! So why don't we take a break and then we'll finish up this episode because we'll talk about this this last chunk and what it might mean coming up.
Well, I was just gonna mention how Booker wasn't wearing his sap, and they remember there's a part there was like the kid was like
because that's because he left the planet so long ago, and I guess he lost it somewhere along.
Well, they didn't actually say though, right?
But last season the whole thing was like, oh, I'm not supposed to go back there because I've been disowned by my family.
So that's what I was trying to. I was wondering if he simply lost it or if he was banished. Like they took it from him.
Probably took it. He was banished.
Or like he was banished and he doesn't wear it because he feels like a jerk now.
Well,
because
he wasn't into hunting those worm things, as I recall. All
right.
I forget the specifics.
All right. So that's why he doesn't wear it because he feels like ashamed or not ashamed,
he
but
was
he doesn't
like going
feel appropriate.
He was like going against. He was going against something. I can't recall the specifics. All right, so let's take a quick break. We'll be right back and finish up the show.
Deep.
Okay, are we back? Are you going to make any doodly noises to come back?
We're back. That's my noise.
All right.
I didn't mean for you not to go doodly doop, Jesse.
Well, no, you said I always had to do the last one.
Oh man,
I didn't to prove you.
I didn't mean that. I was just having fun because I was I wanted to be the last one.
You're just foolish.
Well, I gave you a chance.
Well, see, I was being a hypocrite. I was being like, I have to be the last one. So I'll tell Jesse he always wants to be the last one.
Because he always wants to be last.
Give him a complex.
I fought without honor. I'm sorry.
Okay, so now let's get to the big bad this season.
The super birds that were the harbinger of the planet's destruction.
That was the birds flying away did freak me out though, because FYI,
like bouncing off the ship.
If you're out in nature and birds get all quiet, it is weird, and it's I've experienced that, and no dinosaurs or planet destroying things came along, but it was still disturbing because you don't notice it at first. It's just 5 minutes later you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Where the fuck can I hear anything except like my heartbeat?
What if when that happened, one of the mountains turned into a big rock creature and it threw another mountain rock at you, like in that movie book? What,
The Hobbit?
Yeah, that book.
Yeah, it's not in the book, but it is in the book, but in the movie they take it a little literally.
Yeah.
If you ask me.
Literally.
Quite a bit literally. Okay, so let me frame it this way, right? Going into this season, one of the concerns that I had and many fans had, and a concern that has not been 100% alleviated, but perhaps slightly alleviated after watching this episode, is all the previews were all about, like, the crew of the Discovery is going to face the most dangerous thing ever. Oh, the most dangerous threat, blah, 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 blah. Now, here's the problem. That's boring. It gets boring when every fucking season it's like, oh, the universe is gonna fucking explode.
Yeah,
I don't mind it from time to time. I don't necessarily mind it if that's where they go, but it impacts some of the enjoyment because it's like, yeah, like this whole high stakes cocaine level energy of stress, that's not, it doesn't necessarily equal,
it wears you out.
Yeah, it's the context of it. It's like that you can take the exact same season of storytelling and somebody who's never seen anything can watch it and be like, oh yeah, this is great. But then if you watch 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 of those in a row, you're like, Jesus, like,
can't we just have like, you know, a dispute with one of the other species and, for a while
and
or something?
Part of the deal is, and again, Deep Space Nine was great at this, but lots of Star Trek has been good at this. All the series have been good at this in to some degree or another, is the amount of interesting stories you can get from conflict that is, you know, the simple way is to say interpersonal, but I would say even more about the philosophical questions and things like, you know, like if you have a story about, say there's like a plague that's going around the world and like people are like, there's a cure for the plague, but people aren't taking
it. Is this happening right now?
No. This is a purely coincidental. I'm just making up a completely hypothetical story. There's a plague going around the world. There's a cure for the plague and lots of people don't take it because they're all like, told that the government's going to put a chip in their brain.
Why
or something.
Would they do that?
Well, exactly. That makes for an interesting story. It makes for an interesting drama when you have family members and spouses fighting with each other and divorcing and not talking to each other.
People losing their jobs and stuff too.
People losing their jobs, you know, things like not taking the medicine being associated with other things that other people don't like, being indicators of other philosophies.
Have they had any medicines like this in the past that people have taken?
Yes, and in the past, similar problems have occurred, but to varying degrees and with different solutions. So you can have interesting stories that are like that. Long story short, it doesn't have to be the world's going to explode for the story to be very interesting. In fact, sometimes it's more interesting when the world isn't going to explode and the world's going to be just fine, but everyone's just fucking themselves up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, because like the destroying everything is a big bummer and all, but there's also something to be said about living with a shitty situation, and that's fun to think about too. It's like, we don't always have to think about the worst thing that's going to happen. It's fun to think about different things and how they would be cool or suck in different ways.
I think a classic example would be like Deep Space Nine's, you know, like the Paradise Lost, where the changelings, one changeling shows up at Earth, and everyone freaks out, and they suspend everyone's rights, and the Federation like turns all fascist literally overnight, right? That sort of thing. Or Star Trek 6,
it tends to be more
when you have components of the military who want to, you know, team up with their enemy in order to keep the war going because they have like contracting companies.
It tends to be more relatable. People, you know, things don't always have to be relatable, but it's often successful to make things happen that you can relate to and think about in your life. And it's really hard to imagine the whole universe exploding or whatever.
And now
it's hard to relate to that.
A universe exploding style story can still be a great backdrop to generate interesting character drama and philosophical debates. They do it a little bit in this episode, for example, with Commander Nollis, who gets into an altercation with Tilly because they have a disagreement over what the appropriate thing to do is in the face of death.
Well, he was a jerk. He didn't even want to dare to touch stuff. And that was probably, he was probably ageist about that.
Probably. And he's also, to be fair to him, he's the commander of a station that he probably never expected to be any sort of danger other than maybe the replicators were like offline.
Right. So he's trying to do the best he can.
He's sort of out of his element. Not everyone in Starfleet, as we try to remind folks,
it's not the Enterprise.
They're not all Enterprise D material, right? Mm-hmm. Starfleet's pretty big. Enterprise D is the flagship for a reason, right?
You did that in air quotes.
I did. Yeah, okay. I didn't want the podcast people to know that.
You shouldn't do that then. We need a signal. You need to give me a signal. Like you flick me off.
There it is. Here's the signal.
There's your signal. But I will say, so I was concerned, lots of people were probably continue to be concerned that here is yet another story that's at least being advertised as the end of the universe or whatever. I'm a little bit mollified by this wavy gravitational distortion. I don't know why yet. I don't know what's causing it. I don't know if there's an intelligence or a force behind it, or if it's a natural phenomena that's just floating around, fucking shit up.
Something like a phenomenon.
Or
phenomena.
Is it related to when the Discovery and Burnham came through time? Because remember, they came through time at different periods, and one of the explanations was that they went through some like gravitational turbulence.
That's right.
Did they cause this thing? Like, I don't know exactly what the resolution is going to be, but it would be...
There are a lot of questions.
Yeah, because they already had this situation last season where everyone's fucked up because of the burn, and there's the risk it's going to happen again because of Sokol, and it's, you know, go watch the third season if you're not familiar with that. But the long and the short of it is...
Or just listen to us talking about the third
season. Yeah, we can do that too. We don't need another one of those, so I'm hoping this is more interesting than that. But we'll see, because it depends on how it's structured. I'm intrigued at this stage. Let me say that. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I want to know what that thing is. How did Burnham said, when Burnham was like beside him on the window, magnify that. They knew exactly where to magnify right away. This small little portion to the right of that dude.
Well, they could see that it looked funny from a distance.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like you want to be more specific. I don't know. Did it really look? They had to magnify on it to see that it was weird looking. Like, I mean.
Well,
Burnham
saw
it.
Pointed it out.
Burnham saw it, but she
Mom, Burnham saw it.
Like, she gave some direction. She said, beside him, the window, magnify that. So she gave
some.
Did she
say to the right?
She said, beside him, the window. Yeah, you're right. He didn't even say to the right or to the left. I think she just said beside. Well, I guess we can find out. That doesn't really.
CSI style.
Yeah, it's just beside. It says, this is Commander Knowles from Deep Blah, 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 blah. Then she goes, stop, beside him, the window, magnify that. Oh, it's extreme lunging. 2 pi steridian solid angle. And then the president goes, in Federation standard, please, which is the equivalent of
English
doc.
Please.
Yeah, right. English doc.
That's what Federation standard is, right?
It's English, but it would be you can't say that.
There's a whole complicated
thing. Well, yes,
there's always starts fights on our comments pages because people are like, well, actually Federation standard is English. And then other people are like, no, it's not English, which is English because it's a TV show.
You're just hearing it as English.
So in Blade Runner, when the famous scene where Harrison Ford keeps going, okay, 5 degrees, blah, 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 enhance. Yeah. At least he's providing some kind of direction, but Burnham just says, beside him, on the window, magnify it. How are they supposed to know what to magnify? Jesse, your argument is that it's weird enough that they
I think they all were like, oh.
I think as soon as she said, look at those stars. Mm-hmm. My God, it's full of stars.
Well, they should have had a scene where the guy was like, wait, do you mean these things? And she's like, no, the little next to me. He's like, oh, right there? So you want me to magnify it? How much of a magnification do you want?
I don't disagree, because if this was TOS or even TNG, we would have had a minute and a half to 2 minute scene of them actually sorting that out.
And talking some techno.
Or Geordi having to like look at, you know, bring them all meeting in the conference room and putting up a PowerPoint slideshow explaining the whole thing in detail calmly. As it's all going on out there,
some kind of like Spock looking into his like view scope.
Yeah,
thing.
I do sometimes miss I often miss that slower pacing. Maybe we'll get some more of that in Strange New Worlds. Probably not so much. It's definitely not going to be like it used to be. And we can always go back and watch those older shows for those more relaxed pacing.
In the conference room when they were giving the speeches, it seemed like they had some kind of version of a smart table going on. I guess they basically took pads and put it in a table, which is what a smart table is. But didn't they each have their own little digital buttonless displays that they could fuck with in the conference room in TNG? I think. They said inertial dampeners in this episode.
Yes, it was. This was a dampeners episode.
Definite dampeners.
It was Commander Nala said that, right?
I think so.
Also, he said inertial damp. Yeah, Nala said dampeners. Yeah.
I keep thinking of Nolans.
I know I've seen that guy do other stuff.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the alien race, because the alien race is a newer one, but it was one of the girls in the Children of Mars Trek.
All right, that looks awesome.
But we didn't get a name. I forget the name of this.
Nolas.
But the actor.
His name is Rodrigo Fernandez Stahl.
Oh, okay. What's he been in?
D's Nuts.
He's been in D's Nuts?
He's been in The Caregiver and Detention Adventure.
Detention Adventure, is that like a high school thing or something?
Seems you like know, it's a TV series. He was in Kim's Convenience.
You know, what's interesting is there's a book we have that's like the music from the show Rent. And
at the music shop?
At the music store. And I was looking at the cover, and there's a picture of Anthony Rapp on there. Like, that's fucking Anthony Rapp, because he's like original production of Rent.
Yeah.
No kidding.
He was also in the Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah, that's right. When he was even younger than that.
Nolas was in the short Bing Bang Bye.
What?
It's called Bing Bang Bye. Like Bing exclamation point, bang exclamation point, bye exclamation point.
As in like buy this stuff?
B-I.
Oh, B-I.
Bing Bang Bye.
Like... Yeah, probably. I don't know.
Well, the... the Nolas stuff the whole story with him, he was a tragic Star Trek character in that he seems skilled enough, but he's not an adventurer type.
He wanted them to go into the room where there was no life support.
He started
what a dick.
Well, he started cracking up. You know, not in the fun way, like in the not so fun way. Tilly's trying to handle him. He pulls a fucking gun on her.
Yeah, that's messed up.
Ends up dead in the rescue operation. You feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Did you notice when they picked that up? Tilly like couldn't budge that rock, but then Culber came by and he just went pow and flung that rock off. Like
he's a tough dude.
Well, she loosened it up for him.
Yeah, probably, but he's still pretty tough.
But that shows us there's some stakes. Right, they needed to show some stakes.
Stakes,
and we got to know this guy a little bit. So there's a certain amount of sympathy when he dies, even though he's kind of like act like an asshole. But it's like, a lot of people would have acted like that in that exact same scenario. Right?
I forgive him. I
couldn't say that I wouldn't act like him in that situation.
And so we close down that episode with, you know, the conversation with Burnham and Rilik, which we already discussed, in which they have this philosophical debate about the nature of command, laying down some sort of future stakes for the rest of the season, presumably, but we'll see. And then, of course, we go out and we see that Book's ship has been on autopilot, which I think that happened last season too. His ship's always like trying to rescue him by finding his friends on autopilot, or maybe Grudge is the autopilot. Grudge is actually it's not autopilot. It's just Grudge.
Can you imagine a cat flying
the ship around,
fly through its mind. It's like flying a ship.
And Grudge is flying the ship not because she wants to save Book.
It probably all lunges about and pounces.
She's just hungry. She's like, I guess I got to fly the ship somewhere. Otherwise, I'm not going to get my wet food because it's all locked up and they have
I got to find one of those people to give me my food.
Yeah. Or she can't. She needs to Book to operate replicators to replicate glasses to place on the console that she can knock off. But
hairbrushes.
My cat's broken so many glasses from just like knocking them off shit.
So they find out very rapidly something's wrong with Book's home world, and so they zoom over there and boom, it's horrific.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because sometimes shows like you see something and you're like, that's supposed to be sad. I understand why it's sad, but I don't really. And everyone's crying, but I don't feel that sad for whatever reason. They didn't attach me enough to the character or the situation enough. But when Book was sad, I was like, oh man, that sucks. And like I felt bad for Book because he's so like chill and like awesome. It's like he doesn't deserve that shit.
And it's also because
I mean, and the rest of the people on the planet obviously.
Michelle Paradise was the main writer there on this episode. There were a couple other writers too, and I'm not trying to dismiss them. I just can't remember. It might have been Alex Kurtzman and one of the others. But Michelle Paradise, she's a great writer.
It's an unforgettable name.
And she added that scene. She has that scene where Book is there with his brother and his nephew. And when you're watching that scene, when I'm watching that scene, I'm like, okay, yeah, I got to touch the magic tree. Okay, yeah. All right. That scene was necessary, even though it was slightly boring, because that's the scene that makes you upset when the planet is blown up. If that scene's not in there, even with Book really emoting and us having a relationship with Book, if that scene wasn't there, you would not feel as sad when the planet exploded.
When Alderaan blew up in Star Wars, you just didn't really care that much.
Because
you just knew it was bad.
You didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, right. It's like suddenly your planet blows up and you see she's bummed and you're like, oh, okay, I guess
gotta
read
some books.
You just see an old man like slightly waver and then go like, something happened. Something happened, man. So what I think is an interesting thing, and I don't know if I'm interpreting this correctly, so you can write us in at feedback@discussstartrek.com if you disagree. I get the impression that with this gravimetric wave, this gravity distortion moving through space, whatever the deal is, I presume we'll find out more about it soon, it seems like it has less of an effect on smaller things. It fucked up the space station. It probably only grazed the space station, but it didn't like fucking obliterate it, right? The space station mostly got fucked up later because since it was out of control, it spun into an area where it was in an Oort cloud, so it had chunks of methane and other things out there floating around. That's what caused the problem. It wasn't the actual gravity distortion. And then the gravity distortion appears to go very close to Book's ship. And Book's ship is fucked up a little bit, but it's not destroyed, right? But the planet is fucked up, right? And I'm wondering, if they're going to do it from a physics perspective, as that the gravity, the bigger the thing, the more gravity is interacting and ripping, causing shit to rip
apart.
It's
a grave situation.
Right. So I don't know, because if that's the case, that could play into their strategy of how to like
of great gravity
solve this thing or deal with it. Maybe it's like you need to be in a smaller ship or in a EV suit or something like that to do it. I'm just putting my marker down for that theory.
The cool part is
if it's not true, nobody will remember that.
But if it is true, you can remind them of it.
I will.
Yes. When they played the end music, it was all some sad piano.
Yeah.
And it made me wish that it was like the zombie movies where they take that sad piano and then they add some kind of wailing, distorted electric guitar behind it.
Could you do a vocal rendition of what you mean?
The piano's like, do, 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 do. And then the guitar's suddenly like, wow, 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 wow. And the piano's like, do, do, do.
Sounds like some Battlestar Galactica style music.
Do, 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 do. Wow! Like that, they do that in like the 28 Days Later. They do it in countless other zombie video games.
Countless.
And countless. They do it in all of them. I think they do it in Walking Dead at some point. The do, 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 do. And it's, you know what I'm talking about, right? No?
Yeah, we know what you're talking about.
You're just saying that so I don't freak out.
Yeah. Okay, any final big chunky thoughts, or should we move along to our old friend Odds and Ends?
It's nothing really super chunky, but I got some odds and ends, just depending on how I want to put it.
There's the two different approaches to Kobayashi Maru, right? There's the two different interpretations. Mm.
And there have been that's different ones. Chunky. There's been different ones over time.
Because Burnham's taken the more like the more Kirk approach, where like this is a challenge. This is there isn't a situation you can't get out of it. There's always got to be a way to get out of it. And then the president whatever the fuck her name is, she's like,
we're like,
I'm sorry, I'm just goofing around. And she's like, well, no, this is supposed to teach you that you have to accept the you have to accept this and that, and like,
I don't mitigate death. I don't mitigate death or whatever.
And Spock in Star Trek 2009 version of, J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, he says something about it in being intended to teach you how to face fear in the face of certain death, which I think that's a newer interpretation as well.
I thought it was weird that so the president brought up Kobayashi Maru, right? But what was weird is that then Burnham is like, that's rigged, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, she knew it was rigged. That's the whole point of why she brought it up.
I know.
I've been to the Academy and I know it's rigged.
Yeah, it's like, it's rigged, huh?
You're Starfleet? No, you're not Starfleet. I know it's rigged. I'm Starfleet.
And it's like, my whole point was is that it's supposed to teach you how to do. Oh, it's never mind. Anyways, I thought that was, but right, Kobayashi.
That's one of the things maybe they'll figure out over the course of the season. Is, what do you think that means, Kobayashi Maru? Yeah. Is it just a test of a no-win scenario?
Makes me want to eat some sushi.
It does make me want to eat some sushi. Or it makes me want to, get on a merchant marine vessel, prowling around the Pacific, getting into adventures.
She was talking about they're producing a spore drive. I don't know why they can't make. Back reverse engineer the spore drive. How did they make this?
Well, that's what she said they're doing. They're trying to reverse engineer.
It seems like it's taken them a while, but I guess it's pretty complicated. But then they're talking about a pathway drive.
Yes, the pathway drive.
Have we heard much about that yet?
I don't think
new?
So. I think it's new.
Pathway drive.
I'm curious whether we're going to find out that similar. I mean, it'd be a little disappointing if it's similar to the spore drive or even warp drive, and that it turns out the pathway drive
just
does something, or it does something super fucked up. It's really great, but it does something super fucked
the spore drive,
and we're going to use it anyway.
The spore drive doesn't use dilithium. Is that the whole point? Is it?
Well, I don't know the specifics there, but the spore drive is the whole mycelial network thing. It's just like it's a different way. Instead of a warp bubble through subspace, you're going through the mycelial network.
Right.
And then you have quantum slipstreams.
But it's supposed to be
trans warp.
It's supposed to be more green than warp drive, the spore drive, because they had that whole thing
where you were like killing the monster, you were killing like the monsters that lived inside it or something.
Yeah,
not monsters. I mean, that's not a nice thing to say. The creatures that were living.
Well,
in
makes
there.
For a good video game.
What
level.
Are those things called? Not Gormaganders.
Gormaganders, the tardigrades.
The tardigrades like to tool around in there, but there was also that other creature that Tilly was dealing with.
She said,
"Oh yeah."
She said that it was in reference. She was talking about the spore drive and the pathway drive as alternatives to dilithium. But yeah, there's other downsides to it, I guess, as well.
That's one of the weird parts of season two.
Yeah, and in season three, they said they had. I get confused. I always forget whether it's the quantum slipstream or if it was the transwarp tunnels. But the point being is that they had them and they were using them after. But they got all junked up, and so that's the problem flying in those.
The Borg used some
kind of
tunnel thing, right?
Yeah.
The Borg had a tunnel.
I have a couple odds and ends.
All right.
I got a couple too.
So odds and ends, nooks and crannies. Adira is doing the thing where they're talking to their dead boyfriend, Gray Tal, on the bridge.
Yeah.
Have we established, do we know yet, do people think Adira's weird?
No, they
or have they just learned to ignore that Adira is mumbling to
they know that
himself?
I think they just know the deal.
But
Adira is occasionally
at
gonna,
this point, I'm sure.
So they know that, but so that's another point is Adira's literally talking to themselves. Basically,
sort of yes,
but I mean you see,
but another mental entity.
Yeah, you see, because when Adira's talking to himself, they move back on the shot, and and then the people are walking about, and Adira is still talking, moving the lips around, and
I had a question about whether or not it was meant to be sort of a dramatic license thing, like in Shakespeare plays. When Hamlet just walks five steps to the right and is like, forsooth, and everyone else just doesn't pay attention to the fact that he's just talking to the fucking painting.
Right. See, that's what I was wondering. But I think when they took the shot back, it seemed seem like it was literally happening.
There was that beautiful scene last season where Stamets, he can't actually see Gray Tal, but picks a direction and looks and talks as if he can speak to Gray.
Yeah. Well, regardless of why Adira did this, it's a total tell that Adira is nervous, right?
Yes.
You know, how you can't keep your insecurities bottled up inside if you're broadcasting to the whole bridge by talking to
and
yourself.
Blue Del Barrio did such a great job with that
Adira
whole.
I mean, the act of talking to oneself is a general indication of anxiety, you know. So
yes.
I don't know how close Adira was trying to keep the cards to their hand, their chest.
But there was that whole thing that Blue Del Barrio did such a great job of depicting the quote. Unfortunately, I didn't write down the specific quote where they were all like, signed, sealed, delivered. And, I'm getting ready to stop talking. Right
yeah,
now.
Right. Yeah, they thought that was fun.
And Burnham smiled and recognized that nervousness that she would have understood from one perspective. Or
so they kind of put it. They kind of think it's just who Adira is, and they don't. If it's sign of insecurity, they're like, it's cool. It's just part of the process.
And it's of course they're going to be nervous. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're being particularly nervous and neurotic about it, but that's fine. This show is really great at elevating those different types of personalities. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Stamets. I mean, Stamets has that great line when he's like, is Adira okay? And like Tilly and the others.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Like, he realizes he's like, oh, to be a normal human being, I have to try to pretend like I care about these other people.
They have dots, but they don't have any F-frames.
Yes. They used to have an E-frame. Now they just have dots.
They don't. There wasn't any Jet Reno in this episode.
Yeah, was Jet Reno coming back?
And I'm a little troubled by that. Is she coming back?
She'll be back. Okay. Yeah, Jet Reno will be back. The deal with Jet Reno is it's all about availability.
She's not in every episode. Yeah. Because they're all like, we haven't seen you in a long time. Like, yeah. Where have you been?
I was down in the engineering room.
Yeah.
They keep, when they're on that weird, that blowy up station that was going 722 kilometers per hour.
Deep space repair, Delta 6,
kilometers per hour. It was going 22 degrees per second. For some reason, they were doing some shit where they were always shooting them upside down.
Yeah.
Well, it's because the gravity was upside down.
Yeah, but I mean, it's space. There is no upside down. But I'm okay with that. But I'm okay with that because it's just
they're just having fun. Yeah, their new toys. Their new special effects toys.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It also
showed them walking all slowly across the deck.
I didn't notice that. Like they were in space or something. Like they were floaty.
Like it was just in slow motion.
Why were they
in slow mo?
They were just doing slow-mo.
It was dramatic slow-mo.
Oh. Well, I was just talking about... I mean, that's pretty common. They do the dramatic slow-mo. They don't often just put people upside down.
Yeah, they often have the camera just jerking around all over the place.
That's your bog-standard slow-mo.
It's okay. It's cool. I'm not complaining because it's just a fun trick to remind us that we're in space, basically. Like, look, we're in space. Upside down is right side up. It's crazy. Same reason they do all the zooms into
I'm in space right now.
I didn't notice any major zooms, by the way. Like, how they would do a zoomy zoom into the ships.
I know Jesse was commenting on the camera action.
There's a lot of camera movement, but there isn't a lot of zoom.
I think they've continued to refine that. Season 3 was an improvement for the most part. Over previous seasons in terms of the frenetic, nauseating in some cases.
It could just be this episode has extra because it's a frenetic episode.
This show has that style and that's fine, but they've done a good job of
taking it back.
Of pulling back a little, making it a little more sophisticated because I noticed, especially in the scene with this rotating space station, once they locked into orbit, they were getting the freneticism, but they were able to have stillness too. Because like the stillness was the Discovery, the space station, and then the stars were going crazy around them. Maybe a little bit frenetic for my taste, but better than it has been, I think.
So what I wasn't a fan of was the CGI Burnham in space when she was pulling the thing off. I think that whenever they do a whole person CGI, it's weird and unnecessary. I don't think that it contributed anything. I don't think that they didn't need to do it. They wanted to make her more agile, but they didn't need to do that.
I think part
they could have just used they could use fucking cables, and I would have been fine with that. You know,
part of the issue with that, see, because I know what you're talking about. I think I know what you're talking about, right? Where she's in this after her busy bee, honeybee,
yeah, it gets
worker bee,
her busy bee gets blown up
when it gets blown up, and then she's in the EV suit
and she's trying to unstick the latch sticks, usual latch stick trope. So the latch. Unsticks the latch.
I noticed that as well, and on the second viewing, I think partly it's exacerbated by the fact that leading up to that, the scene with the worker bee and then the worker bee being hit by the methane and the going to silent, all that stuff was, I think, really well done, and it looked really awesome and scary and impressive, including all the CGI elements. And then she shoots out and she's floating around and is like, oh, that looks kind of goofy now, because just in comparison to what we just saw that was so intense and sort of really well done, they needed to do a few extra blur layers or something to make it blend in a little
bit.
But
it still seems like, I think the first time I ever saw that effect, I think it was in the second Matrix movie is the first time I saw that effect. But
Neo is fighting
Neos, a bunch of
different Neos, and it's bright daylight.
Agent Smiths. Yeah, it's broad daylight, right. Which didn't help the effect. It didn't.
No, because in the Matrix 1, part of the reason why it worked is they had a limited budget, so they said everything should be, figured out that green and darkness, darkness tinged green makes the CGI look like hides
and
it the
most
best.
Of it looked awesome.
Yeah.
The CGI. But Anyway, so yeah, that you're right on that. I just think in general, there's not there. I don't. I didn't see the specific need to go yeah. over.
And
the
this
top
is
like
a TV
that.
Show that sometimes has normal dogs with unicorn horns glued to their head, and now they're an alien dog. So yes, we're. I'll stress we are not complaining. We are commenting on how, despite the advance in technology, sometimes this stands out, and because the other things look so amazing.
I mean,
when it doesn't look like that triple. That stands out because you're yeah. like, what the fuck is
and,
that?
And I know part of the thing about nostalgia, this may, what I'm about to say is probably this part in part nostalgia, but I would rather have a shitty looking like miniature than a shitty looking CG.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I agree. I 100% agree.
So, or a shitty looking horn, unicorn horn on a dog. I'd rather have that than some really shittily done CG. And that probably is yeah. partly due to my age, but I think it's true.
Anyways, all right.
Was there a Lurian behind Nalus?
Yes. They're all about the Lurians in yeah. Star Trek these days because yeah. we see them in Lower Decks. We've seen them a bunch of times
when
in
she's
Discovery.
Talking about when she's talking about the iridescent mist. Then the president is talking about the
somebody
iridescent
on
mist.
Somebody on the internet said they thought they caught like the back of a Cation on that station, but I tried looking for
Cation
it. I didn't.
Cation
on the station.
Cation on the station.
Oh no,
that's a song. I don't know. I didn't see it.
Just cuss a whole lot.
Here's an odd and end. Not that much of an odd and end. I mean. Fucking obvious to everybody, but worth pointing out that President Rylik appears to be she appears to have heritage from human, Cardassian, and Bajoran.
Mm.
Oh, actually, I read that. Yeah.
Which is an interesting, and when you look at President Rylik, it's she's got the Bajoran nose ridges, Cardassian spoonhead, but
Cardassian spoonhead.
Well, I don't know.
It's like a,
I don't
a mild
know what
spoon.
The modern safe way to say spoonhead is.
I don't think spoonhead was ever a kind way to put it.
No, it's that spoony is bad.
Okay. Sorry, I guess I'm a little overly sensitive.
I write in and let us know.
This PC language will fucking destroy us.
That's an interesting thing. I don't, you know, probably it's just a subtle little thing going there. But,
I didn't. That's cool. I didn't really.
Yeah, at the very minimum, probably they don't do anything more with
at least
it.
She's not a Ferengi, right?
Yeah.
At the very basic, the what it's conveying. A form of peace between the Bajorans and Cardassians.
Are you sure it didn't mean that the
Bajoran? It could just mean that a Cardassian raped a yeah. Bajoran. Yes, I thought about that.
Or a Bajoran could rape a Cardassian.
Conceivably.
Yeah. Inconceivable. Quark.
So, yeah. So there's
Quark. It's inconceivable.
We've seen that before, Zial and all that. So yes, I understand. It does not mean it's a good thing, but I think they intended.
I think the message
that's intended.
Star Trek is full of good things.
Is that this is it? Now, when it comes to President Rylik, the big question I will have for the rest of the season is whether or not she turns out to be shady or not shady.
Yeah.
Now, there's different types of shady, and there's different types of good. I'm kind of hoping that she is good, maybe good, but like her decisions go down the wrong path or something. But I don't want her to be I'm hoping they don't do the whole thing where it turns out like with the pathway drive or whatever, that it turns out that she's got like investments and she's got a lot of latinum in like the pathway, whatever drive, you know, whatever. Trilithium or whatever operates the pathway drive, and that's why
trans fats. I'm just they trade in trans fats in the future.
In this episode, they have this discussion about like politician versus good or bad, and they show her doing some good, but then they question whether
you think she'll be more or less shady than a TNG admiral.
That exactly. So I don't want her to be like. There's the TNG admirals that are just straight up evil, and then there's the TNG admirals that
they're just angry.
They're doing fucked up shit. They're doing Section 31 type shit.
Just grumpy.
But they're doing it from they honestly believe. You know, that's the classic issue that we deal with every
honestly,
day in the contemporary world.
In the bad world,
people
in your soul.
Who are making decisions that have negative consequences, but they believe sincerely that they are doing it for the good of their people. And then you have the people who are making decisions that they are doing for selfish purposes. I'm hoping it's not going to turn out. It's some selfish thing or some evil thing or whatever. I don't think that's the direction they'll go.
Doesn't seem like that's the
direction. I don't think so.
Going.
But
why would they take time out for the president to teach Burnham a lesson if she would turn out to be evil?
Well, that's why I'm saying I think they're not going that direction, but I'm again, I'm marking it down.
marking it down. What were the All Shanes? That was I couldn't find any All Shanes. They were mentioning something about All Shanes.
Aren't those are the butterfly
people.
I
don't think they are the butterfly people. I thought they were, but I didn't find any evidence of it. So they have just, in my mind, they have much chance of being butterfly people as they don't, because I couldn't find any conclusive evidence.
I thought that was referring to the butterfly.
You might be right. You might be totally right.
I might be.
Any other odds and ends?
When the president said, they are also huge swings of the pendulum, and in a time of rebuilding, there is a very fine line between a pendulum and a wrecking ball. I knew she was going to say wrecking ball before she said it. Yeah. I was like, wrecking ball. She's going to say wrecking ball.
Because of Miley Cyrus.
I wasn't thinking that, but I don't know. Did she sing a song about, it's a fine line between a pendulum and a wrecking ball?
There was a song about a wrecking ball, and she was like,
coming like a wrecking ball.
Swinging around on a wrecking ball.
She's all naked on the wrecking ball.
But what does it have to do with pendulums in that instance?
Well, a wrecking ball has a pendulum.
Well, I know, but I'm saying
it has nothing to do with pendulums. It has to do with the wrecking ball analogy.
Yeah, but
it's a type of pendulum.
But like, why would I think of wrecking balls when I think of pendulums? Because of my
what President Rilick said.
I know. That's why I thought of it. But I wasn't. Why would I think of? Why would I attribute any of that to Miley Cyrus? Because she used the word wrecking ball?
Oh, no, you wouldn't.
No. Yeah. That was humor.
You would.
Oh.
You wouldn't.
That was humor.
It's all...
It's
yeah.
a bit.
It's, not,
okay.
it's not logic, it's
this
humor.
This is marketed as a mildly humorous Star Trek
Very much.
Podcast.
So we're actually agreeing and on the same page here.
Yeah.
We're not squiddled or whatever.
It's just like Star Trek. We actually agree, but we weren't communicating properly.
Exactly.
So we got all flustered.
And now we've resolved it. Oh, speaking of which, normally I don't have a problem when they use curse words in Star Trek. I think it's normal.
What about when Data was like, oh shit?
Yeah, I like that. I thought it was pretty funny.
In Generations.
In this one, Commander Nala referred to a shit show.
Oh yeah.
I initially laughed and thought it was funny. And then I was like, this is bordering on, I'm annoyed that in the 32nd century humans would be saying shit show.
Yeah.
I'm normally not so ridiculous.
Yeah, that's
about
an old school. So that'd be old
but
school.
But that's like a 1,000-year-old saying at this point, you know.
We don't talk about people beasts with two backs, even though everyone knows what that means by now because of school.
And if you do, it would be in some sort of coy way. You know, it's not like something you'd be like, man, this is a fucking shit show.
Yeah, what do you think they said back then, like 1,000 years ago, the equivalent of shit show?
So for example,
real ruckus, a real tumble, a tumblewally.
Oh no, I bet you
it's a real tumblewally.
I bet you ruckus is a post 1600s word. I don't know. I have to look it up. But as a point of comparison, when Book says it was like real shitty or whatever, like I wasn't bothered by that.
No, because I can imagine them saying shitty back.
It's a reasonable.
Shitty,
why not? It's like, who cares? Yeah, it's like they're not even speaking real English anyway.
I mean, shit is like the actual word shit is pretty. I think it'll last the test of time, but saying shit show is would kind of lose its context over time, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they don't even watch TV in the future, apparently, so...
Yeah, what are their shows? What shows are they watching?
Yeah, right, exactly.
They didn't even know what a show is.
The Great Galactic Bake Off.
Whoa, what do they bake?
I don't see how they have time to watch
You have to bake a cake that looks like Living Gawk.
Living Gawk. They have to make some kind of wormhole that takes in...
programmable flour.
That takes in... Yeah, programmable flower. That's better.
All right. Any other odds and ends? Otherwise, we should shut things down. Let people go home.
I think we got it.
Let people finish listening to this podcast. Move along to another podcast.
You could eat dark matter, but you'd have to drip it into a giant bowl of chili like you do with that like hot sauce.
Oh yeah,
oil.
Right, yeah.
That's hot sauce. Drip. You just put a drip in the entire bowl of chili. That's what you do with dark matter.
It'll spice it up.
Otherwise, it'd fall through your stomach or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you want a little dark matter to give it that kick.
Yeah, just a little just a dash.
And you put a little micro singularities in your stomach. You swallow them so it takes the biomass and like zips it out. It feels like you have pop rocks in your stomach or something.
Like probiotic micro singularities. Yeah,
probiotic micro singularities.
Or you just down a jar of tardigrade juice.
Oh my God. Jizz?
Juice.
Oh,
juice.
I thought you said. No. I'm sorry. I wasn't trying to be crass.
Well, maybe tardigrade juice is tardigrade juice.
I'm sure you weren't. I'm sure you weren't. All right. Anything else, or are we all set?
I think we're good, mon frere.
All right. So the normal
people in France won't even get to hear me use the word mon frere because they can't.
Some of them will. Some of them are going to. Some of them are going to.
Come on.
Some of these people are going to be watching the show. All right. So, the podcast content concluded. Now the part where we tell you to follow us on Twitter at It's Got Star Trek.
Follow us.
Follow us on Instagram at It's Got Star Trek. Follow us on Facebook. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
Don't forget
Podcasts,
to like it. You gotta iTunes. Like. You can't just subscribe. You can't just like. You have to like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe.
Otherwise, you suck
you
balls.
Have to like.
You can join us on
sucking
YouTube.
Sucking balls is okay. It's okay if you like sucking balls. I'm sorry. I implied that that was a bad thing.
Of course, it's not a bad thing. It's a fun thing. It's a fun activity.
Yeah, everybody's a winner.
That's goddamn right. That's what I've been trying to tell people for years. So yes, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. Podcast, Amazon, all the podcast.
It's an Apple Podcast. They should call it an Apple Podcast.
And www.itsgotstartrek.com is the main website where you can find all these links. You can sort the podcast episodes by series or topic.
Podcast.
To listen to exactly what you want to listen to at the given time. Tell your friends, tell your family all about us.
If you're listening to a podcast and someone's like, what are you listening to? Or like, is that a good show? You should say, you don't tell them if it's a good show. You say, why don't you find out for yourself? And then you
it's a very aggressive way to market our podcast.
I guess they would
like, listen, why don't you just listen?
It's worth a try. It's worth a try.
I guess it kind of sounds like you're just telling them to fuck off.
Yeah. All right. So we will talk to you about episode 2 of Discovery Season 4. It's called Anomaly, which I think is also, isn't that an Enterprise episode?
There's that movie called Amelie, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. There is also the movie Amelie.
There's Anomalisa.
So we might accidentally end up talking about Amelie, but
or Anomalisa.
Or Anomalisa, but probably
or
we're
fried
be talking
green
about,
tomatoes.
Isn't there some kind of what's that band called that does that song about is Anomaly? They're that band with that album called Science, and they're kind of a crappy band.
Science.
Yeah, I don't know. So you will hear from us again next week when we talk about Anomaly. Until
Star
then,
Trek.
Have a good one, and keep an eye out for our bonus content. Which, by the way,
stay tuned.
Even if you're not an international listener, you can still listen to the bonus content.
Incubus? Is that Incubus?
It's probably Incubus.
Yeah, those guys.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye bye.
Ensign Tall, are you ready?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Locked and loaded. You know, signed, sealed, delivered. Ready to stop talking now.
Good luck, both of you.